States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. And on this week's episode, we'll hear from Alison Brock, who has just been named to the US team for the Rio Olympic Games. And we'll have that team for you in just a moment. But first, we would like to remind you that the views of guests and the host of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. And as mentioned, the team was announced of four athlete and horse combinations and one travelling reserve for this summer's Rio Olympic Games. And that team is Alison Brock from Loxahatchee, Florida, with Claudine and Fritz Kundrens Roosevelt, Laura Graves from Geneva, Florida, with her own Verdadis, Casey Perry-Glass from Orangeville, California, with Diane Perry's Doublet, and Stefan Peters with Four Winds Farms Legolas 92. Stefan also has a direct reserve with Four Winds Rosamond. And we'll be hearing from more members of the team in future episodes. And you can find further information about the US Olympic Dressage Team selection process at usef.org. And the first member of that team that we're going to be hearing from now is Alison Brock. Ali, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, first of all, a huge congratulations on making your Olympic debut on the team. How does that feel now that you've got to this point just a few weeks before you leave?
It's incredibly exciting, and it's really sort of a dream come true, and I just feel very honored to be in this position. I mean, it's a super team. Morale's really high. We all get along really well. We've got very strong combinations on the team, so it's exciting.
Has anything taken you by surprise along the way?
Not really. I think the only things that have sort of been a little difficult is that we experienced a lot of rain in Compiègne, and we experienced a lot of rain in Rotterdam as well. So that made the showing situation a little bit tricky. But other than that, I think all of us kind of knew what to expect walking into those two competitions.
Of course, very different training environment and competing environment to what you're used to. Based in Loxahatchee, but we should tell your story, Ali, because it all began in Hawaii, didn't it? It was not exactly a dressage community you came from. Tell us your story a little bit, the backstory to how you got into the sport.
Sure. Well, I was a really horse-crazy kid, and my parents are, animal people, but they're not horse people. So we always had lots of animals, lots of rescue animals around, dogs and cats and guinea pigs and parrots and whatever, but not horses. So they're not really sure where that came from. And when I was seven, my grandmother bought me a package of riding lessons, like a package of four that you'd go and take on a Saturday morning, just for a month, to start me off. And the instructor that I started with was a woman named Loki Feliciano, and she only took eight-year-olds, but she said she'd meet me, and I went to meet her, and I was small. I was a small seven-year-old, and she asked me if she visited with us for my mother and I for a while, and then asked me if I wanted to do it. And then I looked right at her and said, I can do it. So she took me on, and I think my parents were secretly hoping that I would find it too hard and get, not want to be dirty, and that I would want to quit. But I clearly, that did not happen. So and then I had a really unique situation when I was, I think, nine or so. I got to lease a little Arab gelding named Chappie, who was, a second-level little horse. But he was owned by a trainer named Linda Hosoi, who was one of the more prominent dressage trainers on the island. And that's kind of how I got started into dressage, because I went to go ride with her on and share board this little horse. And I was just incredibly intrigued by the whole sport. It was very difficult. Of course I jumped too and rode Western. We had a very eclectic background, which was one of the benefits of being from Hawaii. I also was in pony club and all that, but the dressage, once I got started in that, it never left me. And I basically left Hawaii when I was 17 after high school to see if I could, further educate myself in the sport and move to the mainland to pursue that without any financial support. So it's been kind of an interesting process.
What was it about dressage then, Ali, that, really hooked you at that age?
It's really hard. It's technically really hard. And you have to communicate so well with your horse. It's very involved. And also, there was something about having the feeling that the horse really understood what I was asking them to do, whether it was the size and the length of the gates or how high they were stepping or if they were going sideways or the bend in the body and the control and the collection. And it really appealed to me. So, and also too, because I was exposed to other sports at the time or other equestrian sports, I was jumping and I was doing Western and all that. The dressage just to me was just so technically difficult. I fell in love with it.
And you had some great opportunities, obviously getting involved, working with Sue Blinks must have been a great influence in those formative years of your career. Talk a little bit about how that came about and what that involved, because I know that you did a trip to the World Equestrian Games in Jerez, didn't you, with Sue? So that must have given you a little bit of insight into being on the U.S. team.
Yeah, that was really fantastic. I met Sue. So, well, I have to back up a little bit. I ended up in Kansas City a couple years. Well, I still need to back that up even a little bit more. I left Hawaii and I moved to Arizona and I worked for the Slocum family outside of Gilbert for 6 months. And then I took a job in Texas working for Jim Eldridge at Stonegate Manor. And I worked for Jim and the Gilbert family for a year and a half. And then ended up moving to Kansas City. And while I was in Kansas City, I started working for a lady named Linda Landers, who's still a very prominent dressage figure in the area. And she introduced me to a lady named Jan Smith, who I started riding for some. And I ended up going to Wellington, taking a horse that I had with me on consignment that was actually owned by the Gilbert family in Texas. I took this mare with me to Wellington and I was going to stay for 1 month in the basically January of 2001. And Jan very, very kindly invited me to live in her house for free. I kept my horse at her farm and paid board on that. And then I was also competing. Jan had a small tour horse named West Point that she allowed me to take to try to qualify to do young riders on. So I ended up in Wellington for a month. I got a job immediately when I got down there working for Lauren Samus, which was great. She had a very busy sales barn at the time. And Sue Blinks happened to be renting Jan Smith's arena. And I tried for a long time to not ride in front of Sue because at that point, I was petrified about riding in front of this Olympian coming off the Sydney Olympics. And, she was larger than life and a real celebrity to me and a hero. And at one point I couldn't, and she happened to see me riding the mare I had on consignment. And she approached me about the horse to find out if she was for sale. And I said, yes, she is for sale. And she said, well, I'd like my working student to try her. And I said, okay. And she came and tried her, and it wasn't the right match. So Sue approached me and said, I'd like to try her, but I'd like to try her as many times as I want. I want to haul her off to another venue. I want to watch you show her. I want my vet to pre-vet her. Like, she gave me this very long list of requirements for her to try the horse. And I said to her, I said, okay, that's fine, but I want a lesson. And I'm not quite sure what made me speak up to kind of bargain for that, but Sue said okay. So she ended up not buying the horse, but she did give me my lesson. And at the end of my lesson, she offered me a job. So I did that summer go back to Kansas City. I competed Jan Smith's horse. I did make it to the Young Rider team, the Region 4 Young Rider team, and go to Chicago and do that. And I promised Sue I would meet her on November 1st, 2001, back in Wellington to work for her. So that's kind of how that all got started. And I really had no money. And I had another sort of fairy godmother, a lady named Marilyn Henderson, who I needed to take a horse to with me to Sue's so that I had something to educate. And at the time I was riding a 5-year-old, well, he would have been 4 at that point, I think, half saddlebred, half Hanoverian gelding named Marky. And Marilyn purchased the horse for me, and so that I had something to take with me. And so I showed up in Wellington with my saddlebred gelding and project horse to work for Sue. So it was great because Sue was extremely good about giving me my lessons. Like, she was committed to the training and like nearly religious about it, which was great, and taught me how to long line. And it was the first time I had been really behind the scenes with anybody that was competing at that level. So of course I was grooming for her at all the horse shows. You know, we had a couple Grand Prix horses in the barn. It was very, very interesting. And then of course she was trying to get onto the WEG team and asked me if I would go to Europe with her to groom for her. And I said, you know, I'd love to. And it was super. So we went up to Gladstone and then on to Europe, and we were based at Klaus Balkenhals. And that was a real wonderful situation to be in, being at Klaus's and seeing day in and day out training and experiencing all that. And then on top of that, we had such a super team that year, you know, with Gunter Seidel and Debbie McDonald and Lisa Wilcox, and Christine Traurig was the traveling reserve. So I feel like at a very young point, I got a very good education with some of our top American professionals, and being behind the scenes with them and seeing how they cope with the stress and cope with the different circumstances that always appear when you're, you know, overseas and trying to accomplish big things. And for that team in particular to take home the team silver medal was just incredible. So it was a great experience.
And I'm sure you'll want to obviously imitate that or reprise the World Equestrian Games in 2002 when you're on the team in Rio. Let's talk about that transition then. After Sue returned to the West Coast, then what happened in your career?
Well, she, you know, she came after that she was on the East Coast for another year and a half, and I worked for her in a total of 3 years. At one point, I transitioned out, and I was doing a lot of freelance work and wasn't her full-time employee, but we were still heavily connected. I was living on the farm and you know, riding horses for her. I was paying her for lessons. It was still very symbiotic. And then when she moved to the West Coast, Fritz and Claudine Kundren, who had owned Flim Flam and sponsored her for years, offered me a job. And Sue had also offered for me to come out to California with her. So it was a hard decision for me to make, but I decided to take a chance and work for Fritz, especially because he had been so loyal to Sue over, I mean, nearly 20 years together. So that's how I got started working for Fritz and Claudine full time. And that I think started in October of 2004.
And then since then, where have you been? Mostly based in Loxahatchee?
Well, what's funny is that my P.O. box is in Loxahatchee, so everyone thinks I'm in Loxahatchee. I'm actually in Wellington proper, and the farm that I work out of is in Wellington. I live in Wellington. I spend 6 months a year, every year in Wellington. And then the other six, at this point, it's usually Keswick, Virginia, but the Kundrens, the first thing we did was go off, and we bought a very promising 5-year-old Polish gelding named PJ that Fritz bought for me to develop. And I took that horse and another horse in 2006 and went out to California and actually trained with Sue with a couple horses for 7 months and competed out there. And then in 2008, Fritz sent me over to train with Jan Brink in Sweden. And I was at Jan's, I think the first time I was at Jan's, for nearly 8 months. And then I went back again in the end of 2009 for 3 months. And at the end of that trip, that's when I brought Roosevelt home to the U.S., was in the beginning of 2010. And then Fritz and Claudine also sent me to go work with Kira Kirkland and Richard White in England for a year and a half, the beginning of 2011 through the Olympics in 2012. So I've done, you know, 4 very long trips in, you know, of training trips and competing with Sue, Jan Brink, Karen Richard, which, you know, it's a opportunity of a lifetime to get to go study with these types of professionals.
Let's talk about your partnership, because you've really obviously developed him over time. Let's talk about that and what kind of personality he is and how the partnership has developed, what kind of a horse he's become and a partner for you.
Well, you know, Fritz had bought him off of video. I was 5 and I had nothing to do with it. And he owned him in partnership, and the horse actually ended up going to Verden that year for representing Germany, being ridden by Hans-Peter Minderhout. So, you know, and he ended up 5th, I think. And then Fritz just left him over there, and that would have been in 2007. And when I showed up at Jan's in 2008, I said, "Oh, Jan, by the way, Fritz owns this stallion. He's coming 6th. I've never met him. I know he's approved Swedish. Do you mind if he comes with me to your farm?" And he's like, no, bring him, and let's, you know, we can put him in the breeding program and then let's train him and get going. And Jan's really good at stallions that do both sport and breeding. So we got him there, and I meet this horse, and he's a very cute horse. He's a very sweet horse. He looks a little bit like an overgrown pony. He's got a lot of hair. He's got little ears, very pretty face, but you know, when I met him, I thought, oh my God, you know, he's got this huge canter that he's a little slow and he's having a hard time collecting it, and I didn't think he'd be hot enough to really go on and do things. And then on top of that, he had a very, very hard time learning a flying change. So, you know, initially, the Swedes were very happy that he was back in Sweden breeding, because he had been gone for, I think, a year. And we opted to leave him in Sweden that when I came home, because at that point he still hadn't learned a flying change. And I just said to Fritz, I said, I don't know if we want a, you know, a breeding stallion, you know, a strictly breeding stallion back in the U.S. Let's leave him at Jan's and see how that goes. And Jan called me kind of in the beginning of 2009 and said, you know, Allie, he's finally figured out, you know, he's doing clean changes now. I think he's going to be okay, and I think he's actually going to be a really good horse for you. So when I got back, and Jan competed him some at that point, he rode him in the 6-year-old test as well, but the changes were totally unreliable. And as a 7-year-old, he was doing clean changes, and he showed him in the 7-year-old pre-St. George class in Falsterbone, I think was 2nd. And then I took over the ride when I got there in the fall and started, you know, learning to figure this horse out. And one of the things about Roosevelt is that he is a cold-backed horse. So you have to respect, he is girthy, and you have to respect that and know how to manage that properly. Otherwise, you can have a big problem on your hand. And but he and I, you know, I we got him back to the States, and he survived the CEM quarantine just fine. And I immediately started competing him as an 8-year-old in the small tour and in the developing horse classes in the U.S. And he was very successful. I think he, in Wellington that first season, he won 5 out of the 6 tests I entered him in, you know, with strong 70, you know, up to 73%, nearly 74. And he was good. And I showed him through the summer and he ended up, did well in a couple of the CDIs I took him into. And he won the Region 1 USDF GAG finals for St. George and Inter 1. And then I thought, all right, that's it. We got to start working on these 1-tempies because we need to start looking towards the future. So I stopped competing him and started playing with the 1-tempies. And Piaf was never really hard for that horse. He grasped that really easily, but he really struggled learning the 1-tempies, and he actually had a hard time learning Passage too. So at that point, you know, I took him and another horse to Kira and Richards in the beginning April of 2011, and I could do like 4 1-tempies. And I said to Fritz at the time, I said, don't worry, I'll be doing the I2s with this horse by the fall. Well, no. I didn't do a single I2 on that horse until June the next year, because that's how long it took to get him confirmed. And that was a very long, drawn-out process. And when I look back on it now, coming out the end of that tunnel, and now 1-tempies and his changes are one of his better things. But knowing what I lived through to get that horse to where he got confirmed and solid and confident, I mean, it was daunting. And, you know, thankfully the Kundrans were patient with both me and the horse and trusted us that we would, you know, get through it. Because I think a lot of owners would have just thrown their hands up in the air and said, oh, come on, you know, give up. But it worked, and then the other part of that is that as he learned to be a Grand Prix horse, he got incredibly hot. So and you know, he'd hit the canter tour of the Grand Prix and start getting, I mean, he'd start kind of bucking, like I refer to it as spronging, because it's sort of that porpoising sort of plungy stuff. And it took us a long time for him to understand that he needed to carry that sort of activity in his body that you need for the trot tour of the Grand Prix test, and then be okay to then pick up canter, and it wasn't like a bucking free-for-all fest. So it was also very difficult. Took me some time to work through that, but I was patient about it, and you know, insistent on taking the horse into the national classes, and until he just settled down and realized that it was going to be okay and he could do it and everything was fine. And, you know, he just sort of started to arrive into himself as a Grand Prix horse the middle of 2014. And then from there, I have to say, once he settled into his skin, it's been just a consistent uphill climb from that point. So it's interesting. It's a journey, and you need to be prepared to really, you know, I really committed to this horse, and in some ways he really committed to me, and we've come out the other end of this process really as a team. So, you know, he is my partner, and I love him and he loves me, and we're like, yep, we're like an old married couple. We've seen it all. We've worked some things out, you know, had some hard times, needed some counseling, but you know, we're on the up and up and it's all going well. So.
Well, he sounds like quite the character in the tech. What sort of personality does he have in the barn, Ali?
He is so sweet. He is really sweet. He's a very friendly horse. He's also friendly to other horses, and not in a stallion-y sort of way. He's really special. He likes to stick his tongue out. He wants you to grab his tongue and play with it. He doesn't particularly like to be brushed at all. He would prefer to be dirty. But if you're there and you're interacting with him, he's very sweet. He's learned some tricks. He'll twist his head on command. He'll pick his legs up. He begs. He talks to you. He's really a pet, and he's a horse. He's a horse that there's no reason you wouldn't fall in love with him. He's just a real sweetheart.
Tell us about the groom who takes care of him.
Right now, I have a girl named Carrie Kuffel, and she's taking care of him. She's doing a fantastic job, and I'm sure she loves him as much as I do. In fact, she'd probably say even more, but that's not true. And she actually started working for me last August and came through Linda Landers, who I'd mentioned before, who I worked for in Kansas City. And Linda had called me before I went off to Europe last year and said, I know a girl who I think would really work well in your program. And Carrie's been wonderful. And she came to me with a horse of her own, with aspirations of pushing her riding forward, and also hoping to be on part of this tour again to see how these things really work, and then also meet the people, the wonderful people we have on this trip, because you never know what opportunities may arise or that from these type of trips.
You had the drive and determination that it's taken to get you onto an Olympic Games team, Ali. Would you say this tour and your experiences in the last few months, has it made you more ambitious in your overall career? Because we all know it relies on the partnership, as you've just talked about, Roosevelt, but then there has to be another horse coming along. Has this given you the appetite to go further and longer?
Absolutely. I think, and I have a five-year-old mare with me that we just purchased, and I'm really excited about her. But I think on a note of that, I've had a lot of people ask me if going to the Olympics was my end-all, be-all goal of what I'm doing. And to be totally honest with you, no. I think going to the Olympics is a byproduct of having the right horse in the right time, peaking at the right moment. But, I fully intend to keep hopefully producing more horses that make it to this level. And I do it because I'm passionate about it and I love it. And when I set off on my personal journey to do this, I wanted to learn to ride to the best of my ability. And I wanted to be an international Grand Prix rider and trainer and coach. And if I go back and look in my journals, I'll sit there and said 10 years ago that I was hoping I could make at least 10 Grand Prix horses, at least, So that's how I sort of view this whole thing, that this is an incredible gift that's happened to me. And of course, it's just going to make me more hungry to create, and produce more horses. So.
Well, I'm sure there's lots of young riders listening to this, Ali, who have the dream of becoming an Olympic rider themselves one day. So give them a little insight as to what it's like off the horse, completely off the horse, and, all the rest of the experience that you've had being part of the team, and what they should be working on to meet their dreams too.
Well, I think the big thing is that it's important to be coachable. That you really have to be able to take the training yourself, and that you surround yourself with top class professionals. If you're around really the best, you will rise up and meet them at that level. So if you want to be top, you need to go work for and ride with top people. And then the other part of that, too, is that it really comes down to the relationship you have with your horse. And, the group we have here in particular, everybody is very, very in tune with their animals. And it's clear. The relationships with the individuals and their horses, they live and breathe those horses, as I do with my horse. And you're so familiar with them and everything about them, and that to me is one of the bigger pieces of it too. That's when things start to get really beautiful, is when that relationship between the horse and riders is nurtured to an extreme point. And, you know, listen to your horses.
Well, we want to wish you the very best of luck on your journey to Rio and the competition itself, the whole experience. I hope you enjoy every minute of it, Ali, and I'm sure want to emulate your mentor, Sue Blinks, in the process of it all and be proud of what you can do and show her what you've done for the team as well. That must be another satisfying part of this.
Absolutely. And also my coach, Michael Barrison, now, you know, I would not be here without his, I mean, he has been an absolute rock for me and helping me go through this journey. And then the other person I need to really mention too is Adrian Pagalilauan, who has worked for the Kundrans and worked under me for 9 years now. And she's at home taking care of and riding all the horses that are there. And I can't do these trips without her, you know. So it's an incredible amount of support that comes from your home base as well to make these kind of dreams possible even.
Well, again, the very best of luck, Ali, and thank you so much for coming on the program.
My pleasure.
And as I mentioned earlier, we will be hearing from other members of the US Olympic dressage team in future episodes. Finally, we have a reminder for you that if you wish to declare your horse for the 2016 Adequan All Breeds Year-End Awards program, the USDF must receive a copy of the horse's breed and performance registry papers and the All Breeds Awards Declaration form by August the 1st, 2016. You'll find more information on the USDF website under the awards section. And if you're planning to compete at the Great American USDF Regional Dressage Championships, you will need to verify that you have qualified by reviewing the qualified horse and rider list on the USDF website and checking your scores at usdfscores.com to make sure that they have been recorded correctly. And also a note to all our listeners of the USDF's official podcast that we'll be starting a new summer podcast schedule. Podcasts will be posted every other week starting in July, and you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and any podcast app. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter for alerts when new episodes are available. Until next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.